and gentlemen, All About Reality with Matthew Goodwin and Luke Patrick coming back to you tonight. And we dip into the Dynasty pool for some wisdom coming to us straight out of the heartland of America. Josh Brickner joins us tonight from DLF. Goody, introduce our gentleman here.
All right, Josh, we got a fellow Northeast Ohioan like me, so always happy to talk to someone from the greater Cleveland, Akron area. And so Josh has the Cleveland Sports Collective podcast where talks about the Browns. He's a writer for DLF. He is also somebody I've gotten to know a little bit this offseason through SFBX. And the main reason I was able to protect my Dak Prescott first round investment with Andy Dalton. And I'm optimistic that the returns will be better. I mean, I took a pretty brutal loss to Matthew Berry this past week as, you know, in what I call the futility bowl. Like if I would have started Kyle Allen and myself, Matt Goodwin at quarterback, I would have actually beaten Matthew Berry as opposed to Aaron Rodgers, you know, Luke's favorite quarterback and Andy Dalton. But every now and then when you hop on the Rodgers train, I guess there is some downside, and negative 17 points is significant downside for Mr. Rodgers. So, Josh, we're very happy to have you and talk dynasty trade values kind of in an RSO lens. So welcome, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matt and Luke. I know after I was watching that Monday night game, I have Dalton, obviously, in a few spots where I handcuffed him or, you know, got him as an insurance policy to Dak. And I know you tweeted out thanking me for suggesting that you do that in SFBX. And as I was watching that game, I said, oh, I probably owe Matt an apology now. So.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, that's a tough way to come in, right? Like on that recommendation.
Where, like, I know, that's what I was like, everyone's going to be like, oh, I'm turning this idiot off right now.
I mean, you're playing in the 20th round of a super deep league.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. That's house money protecting your investment, you know, where the pickings are slim and dart throws anyways. So,
right.
You know, not everybody could be like our own Bob Cowper and grab James Robinson in the 22nd round as one of the five people who did it in SFBX. So, like, you know, I think everybody kind of has their players that they have a special place for and think there's upside. And anytime you can get any type of value that's startable that late, you know, that's certainly like unlocking a cheat code, basically.
Let's talk about that cheat code. And I'm going to start both of you there, actually. Dynasty players were the ones that kind of pointed me towards RSO in the first place. I still maintain some traditional dynasty leagues precisely because I think dynasty leaguers tend to show a lot of foresight on particularly those end of bench, those deep stash guys and what they could potentially be worth in Reality Sports Online. So Josh, this season, more of those guys seem to be popping than any season that I can remember. Are there any ones that so far you would say are kind of reality so far? These are ones that GMs should be on the lookout for to go make, be willing to throw out some third rounders to get them on their team, be willing to go out and acquire them via trade. Anybody that's popped so far or anybody in a forward-thinking dynasty lens that you think guys should throw on the end of the bench in a Reality Sports Online format and potentially get those cheap extensions before that extension period elapses?
Yeah, one player that I liked in the offseason and he got hurt right away is Bryan Edwards with the Raiders. I thought he represented a really good value in a lot of rookie drafts. Also, I mean, he had a few good games. I don't know he put some numbers up the first few games and he's been hurt since then. But I really think, I mean, he's an athletic guy that if he can stay healthy, he's got that huge upside for the Raiders. I know everyone likes Henry Ruggs. Henry Ruggs is a really good player. But I think Bryan Edwards is more of a complete receiver. And I think if he gets healthy, he's a guy who can really pop. When he was at South Carolina, it was kind of plagued by bad quarterback play. Obviously got hurt. So health is an issue. But I really think he's a guy that you could scoop up for almost nothing now and could really bring some return maybe the end of this season. He should be coming back sooner than later or possibly next season. So Bryan Edwards is one who I really like. He kind of became the dynasty darling of the offseason, and now his value's dipping, obviously, since he's been hurt and not on the field as much. So he's a guy I would look to scoop up as well.
I like it, Josh. And guys like that, you're right, had good value in the rookie draft. We've seen his value wane. We're at that point in the season where teams are basically either out of it or trying to build.
Right.
So, Goody, do you think some of these great 500K waiver wire hits and pickups could get it done for Bryan Edwards at this point. For example, as a contender as you are, like in the Writers League, would somebody like our famous love Tim Patrick or Cole Beasley or Adam Humphries, one of these producers, get that done for you? Or are you still holding on for more as a contender at this point?
If I'm sitting on Bryan Edwards or like a I think I'm still holding on. I think as a contender, the threat, and you've experienced this in trade talks with me, Luke, I think in especially depending on the format of the league, how deep it is, whatever. I think that my threshold is how I'm going to get players that are above replacement of my current guys. So if the hurdle I'm trying to clear is finding somebody who I'm going to start with more confidence than, you know, in certain cases, a DJ Chark, a Jameson Crowder, like those types of things. And so if I may be getting to that point with certain guys, like Travis Fulham, if he has another 1 or 2 weeks, I may be starting him routinely over those type of guys or seeking those type of guys out in a trade for like my Bryan Edwards or LaVisca Chenault or those types of things. But I'm not quite there yet on the guys you mentioned, just because I want to see some consistency if I'm going to trade a guy that the community is pretty high on down the line. I don't want to be super short-sighted while I'm still kind of targeting winning now.
Sounds good. And Josh, to your end in Dynasty, when you have a player that hasn't produced yet, someone a little lower on the totem pole than Bryan Edwards, perhaps somebody like a KJ Hamler who also started low value, use those teammates. Tim Patrick has produced 300-yard games in a row, pretty clearly the top receiver on the team for the duration of this season, at least with Cortland Sutton out. Is that the kind of trade, or are you so ingrained in the dynasty mentality that you're not giving up KJ Hamler for a player like Tim Patrick?
Oh, if I'm in a redraft league, I got Tim Patrick all day, obviously. And sometimes it gets hard because I used to be a redraft only person several years ago, and I got very much into dynasty. I think my one friend who got me into dynasty, who said, "Oh, dynasty is a hell of a drug. Once you get in it, you're going to be in a lot of leagues," and he's not wrong. And I actually had a friend that I got into dynasty last year, and during the lockdown, he joined many dynasty leagues this year. So he kind of paid it forward. So no, in a redraft league, absolutely, Tim Patrick is the player you want. And I guess, and this is kind of, we talked about contenders and, making a move to try and win a championship. In Dynasty, I think a lot of folks should do this in the off season, but it's more important that they do it now to really take a look at your roster and where you are in the league. And, the trade deadlines are coming up soon. You got to look and say, am I a contender? Should I start rebuilding? Should I trade some of these players? Maybe I have a Tim Patrick on my team and he's very valuable for the rest of this year. That's great. But if I'm 2-5, 2-4 right now, it's really not going to help. It's not going to help my team now. If I can trade him for a second rounder and get some value back there for my rebuild next year, that's something you really need to look at. So that's very important to look in Dynasty between being a kept, between knowing at this point in the season and even next week as the trade deadlines come up, are you a contender or not? But yeah, for KJ Hamler, I like him. I've stashed him on some Dynasty League teams, but in redraft, he's not rosterable at this point.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I have one thing I'd like to add on to what Josh was saying there, Luke. I think one thing that I'm realizing a lot in season that I'm having a hard time with while I'm trying to figure out what side of contending I want to be on is making the salaries match up sometimes. So in Reality Sports Online, I don't know that we've talked about this a whole lot, but like, if I have a big contract on a guy like a David Johnson or a Christian McCaffrey or whatever, and while those guys are in my lineups, and then I'm looking to potentially find a deal where I'm either saving cap space down the line, getting draft picks, getting assets, it's not as easy as just giving up two firsts for Christian McCaffrey or something. Like, a team has to be able to absorb that $32 million or whatever these guys are making, and I think that's where it's a lot harder to deal some of these players in season because of how, especially these teams that, at the beginning, everybody has visions of trying to win or compete. And so they're spending their cap at the beginning, and then it takes so many iterative moves for a team to unload, who realize they're not a contender, to unload some of those deals to have the space to take on somebody or build in a different direction. And so I think that that's been an obstacle for me personally this year, I think, in making trades that match up. I mean, I think it happened last week in the pod league. You know, there's a couple of guys I think would have been good flex options for me, like Jameson Crowder, Brandon Cooks on expiring contracts. And maybe I had some young pieces to move them, but to fit the pieces of that puzzle and in the right way to get that to work, where I was giving up prospects but also matching the cap, proved to be a really arduous task.
Yeah, I definitely hear you on that. And the matching of the cap is something, Josh, that we haven't gotten to pick the mind of a pure dynasty player about a little bit. So rookies take on even more amplified value because of what Cody was just saying, because they tend to have much more fungible salaries that are easier to swap around. So I want you to put on your two quarterback hat for a moment before I turn over some action to Goody to ask you about specific players. But I've been thinking an awful lot with the news coming out of Miami about Tua taking the reins. I've been thinking about Joe Burrow and I've been thinking about Justin Herbert and the success that he's having. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you five names, and I want you to rank them right now from a dynasty player's mindset. The three guys I just mentioned are three starting rookie quarterbacks this year. Mm-hmm. But then I want to throw in Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. If you're a dynasty player and you're sitting in like those top picks in a two quarterback draft, can you rank those guys 1 to 5? And do you have strong feelings about any of them in particular?
This one is tough because as an Ohio State homer, I don't want to put Justin Fields too high, and I feel like I might. So I love Fields, and Lawrence is probably honestly better than Fields. He is right now. I'm excited to watch Fields on Saturday in his second full year. This is where it gets tough. Tua, we haven't seen, you know, besides what one series in garbage time last week. So it's hard for me to. Tua is all about. The thing is, Burrow and Herbert, we have a lot more film on. We have a lot more game experience. So I'm gonna go Burrow first. I'm gonna put Burrow the first of those quarterbacks right now. I think, you know, his offensive line is a problem, but since he's got weapons, he's got Higgins, he's got Mixon, he's got Tyler Boyd, AJ Green showed that he has a little bit left in the tank on Sunday. So I'm gonna put Burrow first. I think he is the most NFL ready, as we've seen. He's a good player that you can build around. Justin Herbert, I would put second. He's really shown me a lot. I like Herbert. I do. I like what I see from the kid. He's got a big arm. He's making good decisions, and he's getting that experience. I think when he gets that game experience now when he's in there, I mean, that's a valuable asset to have, in my opinion. Third, I'm gonna put Lawrence third with the caveat that he doesn't have to play for Adam Gase. We all can hope Adam Gase is fired by, if not, you know, next week or a couple weeks, by next by the offseason. I watched Trevor Lawrence in that semifinal game against the Buckeyes, and I really, 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 I mean, he's what he's been starting for, what, 3 years? He's got NFL talent already, and he could have came out and probably been one of the top picks this season as well. If he was eligible. I'm going to go Tua fourth, obviously. And obviously, Tua can move up to the front. I just want to see more. Is he healthy? You know, I want to see more. I want to see him play a few games. That's where I'd say Burrow and Herbert at least have some more. I've got to see them and see them succeed. I have a few shares of both those guys. Don't have any of Tua just because I was taking Burrow over him when I had the opportunity. I'm going to put Fields last with the caveat that I think he's got a lot of more room to grow than Lawrence does and the rest of those guys. Obviously, he was only started for 1 year, and he looked great at times last year, but when I went back and was watching some films, I was writing an article on Chris Olave, Fields has a lot of room to improve. So Fields could maybe even, you know, he could I don't think he moves past Lawrence, but I think Fields has a lot to show this year. So that's how I'd rank those guys. I know putting Herbert in front of Tua is might give me some, you know, some quote tweets whenever you guys drop this article, but or drop this podcast. But I mean, I like what I see from Herbert so far. I think the kid's got, I know Oregon quarterbacks don't have the best track record, neither do Ohio State quarterbacks, as much as I hate to say it in the NFL, but I like what I see from Herbert in these first handful of games.
Listen, that's sweet and goody from one Ohio State homer to another. I'm going to turn it over to you here just real quickly because I think Josh, what you just did was give us a moment of actionable advice for our SOGMs. Goody, if you have Burrow or you have Herbert at this point, and I'm offering you the 1.01, like according to Josh's rankings, Lawrence doesn't leapfrog either of those two, and we're in a two-quarterback league. Now we get into those dynamics you and I haven't talked about in a while of like the perceived value of the first overall pick in those things. And Josh, you can weigh in on this too, but like Goody, if I'm sending you the 1.01 for Burrow or for Herbert, assuming that you have other serviceable quarterbacks, let's just assume that you have other, like not as talented ones and not as young and not as good at contracts, but you have a serviceable guy in there, the Derek Carrs, the Phil Rivers of the world. Are you willing to take the 101 and send me Burrow or Herbert?
Am I willing to do that? That's a good question. I think I am with Herbert, and I'm probably a coin flip on Burrow. And I don't watch a ton of college football, but I've seen enough of Trevor Lawrence to just see. I think the guy is going to be an absolute stud, and I understand what Joe Burrow's season was, but I think that Lawrence did it over like, you know, a longer period of time, and then you talk about line investments. I agree 100% with Josh on the Adam Gase thing. Like, I do not want to see him on the Jets with Adam Gase, and that's a very scary proposition. But I think, assuming we're talking super flex, I think I'd be 50-50 on the Burrow piece and lean honestly. I'd say no, but the only reason I'd say no on that is because, well, is if the cap, like we've been in cap accelerating years where the value has been progressively going up on the rookie wage scale. So assuming that is still going directionally the same, I view Burrow and Lawrence as a coin flip, and I think I'd rather have the, you know, the proven piece at a slightly cheaper cost. But if the cap is going down, lack of NFL revenues, things like that, and the rookie wage scale is tied to that, I'd be just as happy with Lawrence.
Awesome. Well, babe, you guys both gave me something to ponder on that one because I don't know, like, right, like Josh and to you, you could answer that briefly too. And then we'll, and Goody then hop in and ask our man some questions.
Yeah.
Josh, the rookie contracts are 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So you would essentially be trading 3 years of Burrow or 4 years of Burrow for 4 or 5 years of Trevor Lawrence, respectively. Is that something that you'd be willing, which side of that would you want?
Give me Burrow at this point, because now on Herbert, that does make sense why you'd want to do it. Now for Herbert's salary, since he probably doesn't matter where those guys were drafted, because his salary wouldn't be as high Burrow's, correct? So that was why I was thinking Herbert might be a steal if he keeps going the way he's going.
I'm impressed. I honestly was low on him. I told Cynthia Freeland when she was on her pod that I was low on him, and you know, I'm man enough to admit that I think he's shown a lot so far, and I really want to see how it impacts the receivers and Hunter Henry over like a prolonged period of time. You know, now they just had their bye week. I really want to see what it does with Mike Williams in particular. I think Keenan Allen is just a tactician, as a route runner. So I think that, you know, he'll still be strong. I just want to continue to see how like the offense grows and develops. So like, what, get Austin Eckler back in there and let's see this thing full throttle and see where it goes too.
Yeah, you guys, I have to say, and this is a shout out to your colleague and our colleague, Jaron Foster over at DLF, Josh, yep. Mm-hmm. Which pulled me into my only Debbie league. and I was thrilled with it. I loved it. But once Goody and I got a little bit deeper into the podcasting game, I couldn't handle it. But in my first ever Debbie draft, I drafted Trevor Lawrence and Jonathan Taylor as Debbie players. And,
nice.
And I gave that team up, and you know, now I'm full throttle back in RSO. But I still look fondly back on that like little roster that it was as it was back in the day, like what it could have been. But yeah. Nonetheless, Goody, I've still seen you and your boy long enough here. So, like, what do you have for him?
Okay, well, I don't know how many quarterbacks we're going to talk about here, so I just want to at least keep that going for a second. So, Josh, obviously, with your, you know, the Browns podcast you have and everything else, let's talk. Can we talk a little bit about Baker Mayfield?
I want to kind of ask
from a real NFL perspective and a dynasty slash RSO perspective. Number one, like, where are you ranking Baker on those five quarterbacks you just said? Are you, is he number six, et cetera? In startup leagues, Baker is going like this offseason around 2.4 years, $32.5 million total. Let's call that a super flex price, I would say, at this point. You know, the hard part is with our data, it's really hard to sift through whether or not that these values are super flex leagues or traditional one QB leagues. So, like, what's going on with like that? I mean, so that's a value for context. And then it's like, hey, are we losing faith in him as an NFL quarterback and standing with the Browns? Or people are reacting to that? Are we, and then how do we feel about him contextually in dynasty from a super flex perspective and like what his trade value is?
I know it's a big question. No, it's okay. I've thought a lot about this, and I talked a little bit about it on our Browns pod yesterday. And it seems like there's two camps right now, the loudest, most vocal people. There's the camp of, oh, Baker's the best quarterback we've had here in 20 years, and he is. And how dare you criticize him and come after him. Then there's the camp where he's awful, he's overrated, start Case Keenum. I would say I'm somewhere in the middle right now to where I've seen him play better than any Browns quarterback I've watched since we came back. It's since 99. And that's the truth. But there's been times where he's looked like any other Browns quarterback. He's jumpy in the pocket. He makes some poor decisions sometimes. The biggest thing with Baker, especially his value, is when, how much did you spend to get him? Me, for example, in some Dynasty Superflex leagues, I drafted him after the 2018 season, where his Superflex value was end of the first round, beginning of the second. So as a Browns fan, and as a, I thought it was great to have our first legit quarterback be the anchor of my Superflex teams. Unfortunately, those teams aren't as strong as they are right now. The biggest thing with, I would say, with him with the Browns is, I mean, he's had, what, four head coaches, three coordinators in 3 years. I mean, the Browns have ruined quarterbacks. That's why Lawrence is a slam dunk prospect, but I've seen the Browns ruin so many quarterbacks that I'm cautious about it. So I want to give Baker the benefit of the doubt, but we can't overlook just that some of the decisions he make. And I believe his fourth quarter QBR this year is 27.8. So that's a problem. Even in games we're winning, he's just not getting the job done late. And the problem is, especially for Dynasty Superflex RSO value, I don't think he's ever going to be that quarterback that we, you know, who broke the rookie touchdown passing record. I think what Stefanski is trying to do is put him in a situation to maximize his strengths, but his strength is not throwing the ball all over the field and throwing four or five touchdowns a game. So I would say that at this point, you have to hold on to him, unless you have a crazy Browns fan who is 100% sold, or a crazy Oklahoma Sooner fan, then my God, sell him now and try and get at least some of your value back. But you cannot, and I wrote an article for DLF about this, you cannot sell him too low, because, I mean, you have to at least hold on to him. And if he puts together four or five good games in a row and his value gets back up there, then you sell. But I think you have to hold for now, unless you're getting a decent return back. That's how I feel, and it hurts. And like I said, I don't give up on him. I'm not giving up on him. I want to see what he can do. Obviously, whenever people are doubting him, he usually plays his best. He's done that since Oklahoma. So I think long term, I'm a little concerned Browns wise and you know, Dynasty Superflex RSO value. And I would say the Browns have a big decision to make at the end of the year. Do they pick up that 2021 fifth year option? So he, and obviously he, you know, he's not Barry's guy. Andrew Barry didn't draft him. So it's, but of course the Browns are too good. They're not going to have a top pick. So I guess we're kind of, the Browns are kind of in limbo, and you're also in limbo if you have Baker on a super flex team right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, Goody. I don't know. You and I haven't spoken enough about him because I think he does merit a great conversation. And I think Josh, you raised precisely the point. For me, it's that the Browns are finally turning into a franchise that I trust a little bit to do the right thing. It's that they're 4-2 right now. They're not going to be drafting high in this upcoming draft, I would anticipate. I think they're going to finish the season relatively strong. I think Stefanski's a good coach, and I'm watching what he's done for I honestly don't think Kirk Cousins is as good a quarterback as Baker Mayfield, and I watch what Stefanski do for him on limited opportunities and just really efficient opportunities. That dovetails really nicely with a superb running game that the Browns are producing, a much better offensive line that they can only get better as they get healthy.
Right.
Like, frankly, I think they're finally – I think they're not a franchise anymore that are going to damage Baker. I think they're actually putting him in a position to succeed. And considering where he could have gone, like he could have been this nightmare scenario of ending up on the Jets and watching what they've done to Sam Darnold or something like other quarterbacks. Like, I think Baker's in the spot, and I think if I had to predict now, I'd be willing to like be – to bet a substantial amount of money that they pick up that option, because I think
they we have to. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with everything you said there. I think that, I mean, you're in a little bit different situation than like the Bears were with, say, a Trubisky, who was kind of, you know, who had less of a college track record, you know, versus a Heisman Trophy winner. And yes, a regime that was different and different coaches and everything else, but they have built the line there. I mean, I think, you know, I think the hard part is, like, you've gotten the Browns, as a Browns fan, they've gotten spanked by the Ravens. They've gotten spanked by the Steelers. So two huge division rivals, at least for people in Cleveland. And I think that's glaring. Granted, both of those games are on the road, and maybe those tilt a little bit differently, you know, when they're played at First Energy or whatnot. But I think that's the litmus test and the bar. You know, when a team is 4-1, it all of a sudden goes to Pittsburgh, national TV game, Nance Romo. I think that as a Browns fan, that's what's a little scarier to me. Like, I was all hyped about national game. I'm going to not watch Red Zone this week, and I'm going to, you know, like, I told my wife and my kids, like, leave me alone. Like, I'm serious. And I made it through, you know, probably 2.5 quarters, and that was giving them the benefit of the doubt. But, like, with the rib injury, with Chubb being out in Pittsburgh with aggressive defense, I mean, I don't know what he was doing on the pick six. He just did to Fitzpatrick. He just didn't read. It didn't seem like he read the coverage right. And, I mean, to be honest with you, the scariest thing about the Browns to me as, like, a fantasy football guy is the fact that, like, you have two huge personalities in Landry and OBJ at the receiver positions. And like, not only do you have to kind of feed them and keep them happy regardless of what the score is happening. You know, earlier this year, Baker threw a touchdown to Harrison Bryant and then went over immediately and, like, had to tell Landry and
stay in it, guys. Hey, yeah.
Stay in it. Like, your time will come. And so, like, I think that OBJ is a guy who kind of feeds off, like, the energy of making a play early in the game. And if that play isn't there, then I don't think he checks out, but I think then he gets a little frazzled on when that's going to happen. And I think Landry's a little bit different in that realm. I mean, I think Landry's been great as a Brown, but so, you know, I'm optimistic in general. The schedule lines up pretty nicely with winnable games and the next, like, 5 or 6 or so, I would say. And so, you know, I mean, 10-6 is real, within the realm of possibility. And you told a Browns fan that they'd go 10-6 at the beginning of the season, I think they, you know,
I'd be
on board with it. But so while we have you as an expert here, let's take a quick pause for our sponsors, then we'll come back and get to some Reality Sports Online trade value questions.
Thanks for listening to the All About Reality Pod. And before you smash that skip ahead button, let me tell you about Breaking Tea and a sweet discount for our listeners. Breaking Tee makes cool, timely, comfy t-shirts and stuff for sports fans. If Pat Mahomes hits on a play called Jet Chip Wasp to win the Super Bowl, they've got a great-looking Jet Chip Wasp shirt the next day. If Max Muncy tells Madison Bumgarner to go get it out of the ocean, same thing. If Megan Rapinoe breaks off the Are You Not Entertained pose in the World Cup, well, you get the point. So check out the site, BreakingTee.com, and use code REALITY15 for 15% off at checkout. It'll help the pod, it'll help Breaking Tee, and it'll help you get a new favorite shirt for you or someone you love. Thanks.
And folks, we are back with Josh Brickner from DLF and my trusted co-host, Luke. We're going to talk some dynasty trade values kind of with an RSO lens. And really, let's talk about hop-off points for some of these players now. I think you have some big names that are maybe declining assets for injury purposes, for role and target shares in their offense, et cetera. So, and then some other guys with uncertain outcomes going forward potentially. So I'm going to throw five names at you to start and let's see what you think about like what you'd be seeking from a dynasty trade value. And I'll give you the contract values in general. I think the first one kind of due to injury of his cohorts and now being injured himself and a murky future with his team with a tight end in waiting. Zach Ertz is 2 years, $28 million on RSO, which is, I would say, you know, not quite top three pricing perhaps, but on the cusp of that. Obviously OBJ, 3 years, $66 million total. Another guy whose extension values have really plummeted in the leagues I've been in, Juju Smith-Schuster, in the offseason was getting 3 and 75, and now I'm seeing. I think I saw an offer in our writers' league where he got offered two years, $8 million. So on maybe some uncertainty in Pittsburgh, his role in Pittsburgh, and/or moving on to another team. I think that's got to be a smash accept in roll the dice.
Absolutely. Juju's a lottery ticket at that. I mean, you saw what he can do if he's the featured guy or he has another. Yeah, I Juju would smash.
Yeah, yeah, regardless of price, if that works or not, I think that's better than any other thing you'd be getting.
Absolutely.
Aaron Jones, 2.5 years, $61 million. And Melvin Gordon on some legal news, 2 years, $37 million. And then James Conner, who's pieced together a few nice games in a row, it seems, 2 years, $28 million. So is there any one of those that you want to lead with and talk trade dynasty trade values?
Sure. OBJ, I have a few shares, and he is – if I'm glad I don't have that kind of – I'm not in a contract league. It's I think it adds a great wrinkle to it because there's no way I can't sell him just, you know, without a three-year, $66 million price tag on him there. So he is – and I wrote an article about him. I did a series on a couple guys called Hold On for One More Day based on the great Wilson Phillips song for DLF. And I talked about OBJ.
Harold and Kumar reference.
Yes, Harold and Kumar. Yeah, the extreme mix. OBJ, I mean, he was a top five dynasty asset just last year. But, you know, especially once he traded the Browns, it was, him and Baker are going to be build on. And he was the top dynasty asset for years before that anyways. So I think you're never going to get your full value back for OBJ. But if you tried to sell him now, if you tried to trade him now, it's going to be for peanuts, literal peanuts. I would wait. Like I said in the article, and I'm going to say it again, I would wait until he has a few good, he puts a few, I mean, the schedule's going to line up. Let him put three or four really good games in a row together. Hopefully he can do that, or at least three out of four, four out of five. And then I try and sell when his value's a little bit better to a contender who at that point could think, you know, and he could be the missing piece during the stretch run that helps you win a championship if he plays, you know, if he gets back to OBJ, making plays. And I think when the Browns are at their best, they're using the run game to set up. I think that Dallas game is what the Browns want to do. Run the ball, pound the ball, use OBJ to, you know, and Landry, especially OBJ to, you know, to make some big plays, and Landry to move the chains. So if for OBJ, I'm holding for now, unless someone makes me an offer I can't refuse, but I would wait until he puts together a few solid games right now. That's for OBJ.
Right. And if you're a contending team, are you trading for a guy like OBJ, say you have a receiver need, are you trading a first and a player to make the salaries match up? Are you like what type of asset are you giving up at this point where you feel comfortable about it?
It'd be hard for me. A first, he would have to be literally the missing link between me and holding up the trophy that I, because it'd be hard for me to give up a first and a player. If I know you'd have to make the salaries work, I would give up a young player with upside, maybe a McLaurin. Yeah, but I like McLaurin more this year too. It's tough. It's hard because, I mean, what do you give up? You at this point, I try and buy low on him. Absolutely. If I'm a contender, I would absolutely try and buy low. Unfortunately, where I have him, I'm right in the middle, having to make a decision.
Right. Like, I don't, at this point, yeah. Like neither you would give up like James Robinson in a second for him.
Oh,
right?
Easy. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But that's selling too low, I think. I mean, I love James Robinson, but is he, you know, what's his value going to be past this season? So it's, James Robinson is second all day if I'm a contender. Absolutely. And I'm set at running back. I would make that deal.
Yeah. It's interesting. In RSO, I think James Robinson in a second would get it done. I think that's a very fair offer from Goody on the shorter contract.
Right.
I think that would, just because the RSO owner is also probably looking at Robinson on a 500K free agent contract that he's going to have to extend at a pricey, like
right.
James Robinson's demanding on the algorithm now, like he's an RB1, as you might imagine. Right. So he's, if you want to keep him and not fight for him at auction, you're talking, I don't know, Goody, you've seen it, but it's like we're talking north of $25 million per year for him, right? Like,
unfortunately, wow.
It's just crazy. Go ahead.
It would be interesting because running backs there. I know my friend Shane Manila. I don't know if you guys know Shane. He wrote an article for DLF about how running backs their value just decrease. I mean, if you look at last year's first round dynasty startup picks, I think David Johnson was going top 10. You know, top. So it's, I mean, just the running back values crater. So they fall off a cliff so soon. I mean, Kenyon Drake is a guy who if you want to sell someone after his Monday night performance, he's a guy to trade him. Immediately, I have one dynasty share, and I'm looking to trade it yesterday after after his Monday night performance. So I would say running backs. I'm not sure if I'd pay James Robinson $25 million a year. Are there folks in the leagues who try and maybe do it? Is there a zero running back where guys will try and use those free agent running backs to make their team and spend all their money on quarterbacks and receivers and the top notch tight ends? Because that'd be a way I'd try and play it if I was in one of the RSO leagues. Because boy, those running backs, you could be stuck with a guy at $25 million for a couple more years, and he could be, he could just lose his job, get injured. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, that strategy is certainly viable in RSO. A couple of the guys that are doing a really good job in our Friends of the Podcast League that we just established this year went with really good long-term contracts for running backs for tight ends and wide receivers. They went zero RB functionally, and there's a couple of them are enjoying success, as you might imagine.
Right.
With this year, it depends on what zero RB was.
Right. Like, well, yeah.
The guys that are waiting on Madison are not as happy as the guys that were waiting on
Ronald Jones or
So
yeah, right, exactly. So do you want to talk about Ertz now, Josh?
Yeah, we can talk about Ertz. That's a curious situation because I don't want to say they're phasing him out of the offense, but it you can tell that Dallas Goedert is the QB of the future in Philadelphia. So it depends where Ertz lands. I mean, if he lands in a situation like New England, then he's going to be worth that. What is it? You said 2 year, 26 mil.
Yeah, 28.
Then he's going to be, then that's going to be a deal. But if he gets stuck on another team if he signs on a team with another really good tight end, I would take that risk with him. I think he's got the talent, and that situation in Philadelphia is just all kinds of messed up right now on offense. So I would say this year, I know he's hurt now. This year is going to be tough because Goddard's coming back. But if you're rebuilding, you can get Ertz on the cheap, I would think about it. And just, it's kind of like Juju, hope he lands in the right spot next year and you have a top three tight end, and it you know, in a situation where he's the guy, and we went how many Pro Bowls? I think Ertz has went to what, 2-3 Pro Bowls in a row. I mean, he can be that guy if in the right situation. Just Philly is not the right situation right now, and there's a probably 10% chance he's on the team. He's in Philadelphia next year.
Yeah, Ertz is a tough one to watch, right? We had this kind of the drumbeat from the dynasty community, so they can say I told you so. Some really good analysts have flagged Goddard for a while, and have flagged particularly Philly's love for Dallas Goddard. But Ertz has been so productive for so long, and with all these wide receiver injuries, you expect that he was going to step up again and become that number one wide receiver.
Right,
and he just hasn't. And the only flag that had me nervous about Ertz, and where I think your analysis is leading us down the right path, is for all of Ertz's acumen and all of his savvy as a receiving option, he was never this outstanding athlete. And sometimes at the end of those careers, at the tail end, the end comes faster than we want than for like the truly elite athletes like the APs of the world or something like that. Like, it might have caught up to Ertz, those injuries and his lack of totally superior athleticism at the outset of his career too.
Yeah, Father Time is undefeated, as they say. And some guys can hold him off for longer, but yeah, that's a great point, Luke. Very good point.
Yeah, having said that, I don't mind tossing like late round picks after him, or as you say, I don't think he's going to be an Eagle. And sometimes those fun speculative big names during the offseason can fetch more when they're – and he's still going to be useful this season, I anticipate, to some degree. I mean, tight end is still just a waste.
Oh, it's
right. But at this point, though, like with Ertz, and granted, when he comes back from injury, who knows what it's going to look like. But say Goddard's back in the picture, like you're seriously debating whether you're starting like Jimmy Graham or Trey Burton or those types of guys instead of Zach Ertz, and I think that's a new thing for people out there right now.
It is, and Luke, you made a good point about And this is kind of your OBJ rule here. If, let's say, Ertz goes and the Patriots sign him and they, bring Cam back, or they have a new quarterback coming in, whatever. I mean, his value would skyrocket, and that would probably be the best time to sell him, because his value might never be higher than that. And if he is going down, of what Bill Belichick, if Matt remembers when Bill Belichick talked about Bernie Kosar when he was in Cleveland, he said he had diminishing skills. So if Zach Ertz has diminishing skills and he signed somewhere exciting in the offseason, that's the time you want to sell him for a maximum profit.
Yeah. Well, I remember that.
Josh certainly does not have diminishing skills. And we have him just for a couple of minutes. Any final questions for our guy here?
At this point, are you considering Aaron Jones a top five dynasty running back at this point, or getting up there? Like, I know that you have the rookie guys, but I mean, RSO is going 2.5 years, $61 million. I mean, everyone thought that the touchdown regression would come back to the mean, but it hasn't really. And this is with still some, limited usage and everything else. I mean, what do you think is, looking at your crystal ball, what do you think is going to happen with him this offseason in Green Bay? You think they find a way to get it done and that he stays, or he's still super valuable in Dynasty? Or do you think that you're looking at something not so certain?
I mean, he's a big risk, and it's almost like a boom or bust situation. I don't say boom or bust, but yeah, if he signs in Green Bay and they really, if he's the guy and they, I don't know what Jamal Williams' contract situation is like, but if they make Aaron Jones the guy, Dylan is kind of the complement, then yeah, he might be worth that salary, and he might be a top dynasty running back. But if, they haven't signed to a contract yet, I know they said they wanted to, they haven't. If they take AJ Dylan so high, it makes me curious. If he doesn't sign in Green Bay, who knows where he could go, and then his value is going to be all over the place. So if he stays in Green Bay, yes, he could be he's a top five running back. He has that potential, and that could be his perceived and actual value. If he becomes a free agent, then it's just a crapshoot, in my opinion. And I'm not sure if I want to spend that kind of contract value on a guess like that. It sounds crazy, but I'm not sure if I want to take that risk personally. Now, if I want him on my team this year, and maybe you have to eat that contract so you can win a championship, I think he's going to be a valuable running back, knock on wood, that he stays healthy. But he's a boomer bust guy for the future, in my opinion. Yeah.
He kind of strikes me, Luke, do you think that he's the type of guy that like the franchise tag was invented for in our league, basically?
Yeah, buddy, I think we've talked about him, and grudgingly, I have to admit how talented he is, and, yep. and I think you're totally right. He is precisely the kind of running back I love slapping that tag on, because really, worst case scenario, you're looking at a massive one-year hit, but that's what running backs, like the talented ones, are going to cost you anyway, and I'd much rather have them on the short term. And so, yeah, like, and even 2 year, $60 million, if you can knock that half year off, if we're assuming it's not a 3 year contract,
right?
Then yeah, like I'm willing to go to 2 years on Aaron Jones too. I don't, however, I'll answer your question both ways. I'll talk both sides of my, out of my mouth here. One, I got to compliment Josh. This guy is like a natural RSO GM. Like you can see him trying to would I do that for that contract? And so I'm with you. I would do it for that contract, but in my head, I named 10 running backs I would rather have, not five,
right,
than Aaron Jones, but I would still pay the man because they're so scarce and they're so rare to have, yes, a potential top five guy. Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone's going to pay me that contract or they're going to give me a first for him. But insert random like rookie running back here, Etienne or Chuba Hubbard or whoever you want. Take the two rookies this year, CEH and Taylor. I assume that I want like probably DeAndre Swift more too, J.K. Dobbins by this time next year, Miles Sanders, Josh Jacobs, and then we're not even talking the Christian McCaffreys and the Saquons of the world yet.
Kamara, so, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yep. Kamara, Dalvin Cook. Come on, man. Like there's 10 that I could – like Derrick Henry, that guy apparently is really good at football and no one's giving him credit, right? Like so.
Yeah. That's true. Chubb too. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, man, you asked a great question precisely because he's not a top five running back, but he's absolutely worth $30 million per year in the RSO format.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. Let's close this up. Obviously, Luke, I think if we have a spot open, the Friends of Reality Podcast Guest League, I think we know who's first on the waiting list.
Absolutely. I'd love it. Yeah, bring me on. Yes.
It's definitely Josh. But like, just wrapping this up, like, cause we're talking dynasty trades and everything else. Who are some guys that you're trying to get right now? Who are some guys that you're trying to sell? I know we talked about some of them. I mean, just throwing some other names, like you don't have to mention these if you like other guys better, but like the Adam Thielens, you have Mike Evans, DJ Moore, like those type of guys are if you're on the buy or sell side, and then just whomever else you have.
Yeah, Thielen, I'm selling. I actually traded him away my remaining share in the offseason, just because guys like him I feel like are kind of a grenade on a dynasty team where his value is very high right now, but it takes one injury. I think he hurt himself on Sunday, correct? I don't know if it came out, if it's Thielen did. Thielen's the guy I'm looking to sell high right now before, because I think he's one big, I mean, Jefferson is gonna, I mean, Jefferson's the real deal, looks like the real deal. It's gonna take a leap him, and he's one, and Adam Thielen's one big injury away from losing his value right now. Mike Evans is another guy I'd probably want to sell. I like what I've seen from Tyler Johnson. I think Godwin's the wide, in my opinion, the wide receiver one there. I don't know if Evans' value will ever be as high as it is right now. And even if you look at some of his games, he's kind of been touchdown dependent this year. And as we know, any analytics guy can tell you, you can never depend on the touchdowns. He's really not getting the yardage and those PPR points that you want to see. Who's the third guy? Oh, DJ Moore. I'm buying DJ Moore, honestly. And I don't think his value is going to be lower than it is right now. As far as this is the time to buy, because I underestimated Robbie Anderson this year. I really did. And it's great to see him doing well, but is it sustainable? Probably. But DJ Moore is the best wide receiver on that team, bar none. And I just think the cream's going to rise to the crop, and he's too good and too young. And I just think he's going to be a great receiver for many years. So DJ Moore is a guy that I would, if you can buy low right now, absolutely do it. Like if you could trade Adam Thielen or a Mike Evans straight up for DJ Moore, I would do it right now and not even, I mean, it would be done right now. I don't know who's going to take that trade, but if you can, I would get DJ Moore as a guy. Terry McLaurin's the guy I'd like to buy low on. You have to hope that – I think the talent's there. I just – obviously the opportunity is terrible. And as you said, Luke in Washington, the offensive things are pretty sad there right now. So, but he's got talent, and I assume he's getting a quarterback upgrade as early as next year. So that's – McLaurin's another guy I'd love to buy low right now.
Yeah, no, those kind of trades are the ones you can go to your league mates with a straight face. So if you're sitting, I mean, this has happened to me in the Writers League. Adam Thielen is one of my favorite players, one of my favorite personalities in the league, but he's on the last year of his RSO contract. Yep. He is the one getting all the love in trade offers from my league mates. And at some point, I'd like to make that a trade where I get a younger McLaurin type, precisely because, I mean, he's literally third in the league in scoring in some formats, right, including ours right now. So, and the good news is he was upgraded to full in practice this
week. Okay, good.
Like good to go. Like he's fine. But yeah, like you make the right point. And I think in leagues that are robust RB guys, you might be able to get some of the DJ Moores of the world. I think in the more dynasty savvy leagues, you're not touching him, right? He's such a that community, but they're like, no, that you can go home and take your ball too.
Right.
But yeah, like Goody is not as high on as some analysts that I trust, and he, I think
on who?
On DJ Moore. You made some good points.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Right, but at the same time, if at a certain point the cost it's like where marginal cost equals marginal revenue. If you're hitting that sweet spot on the demand curve, like I'm in. Like I mean, I can, the last couple of years I've loved DJ Chark. Now I find myself just thinking about like, okay, well, I still love him. I love the opportunity and everything else. And I'm looking forward to like future years, but on a weekly basis, when I'm plugging him into my lineup against some other alternatives, I'm like, okay, am I starting this week, like Travis Fulham or DJ Chark? Am I starting Jerick McKinnon or Boston Scott or DJ Chark? Like when you're thinking about it in that lens and like weekly, and you're trying to put your best lineup forward, it's not always as cut and dry. And like, you know, I usually use like Fantasy Pros to settle my tiebreakers and see where the experts have, you know, the percentages. And I'm probably like, if I go DJ Chark or Travis Fulham, it's probably like 97-3 in favor of Chark. But like, you know what I'm getting at though. So that's the algebra for me to make a trade as a contender sometimes in certain leagues. In deeper leagues, like I'm just looking for like an Adam Humphreys guy just to be able to plug into my lineup so I have someone serviceable at my second flex or whatever.
Yeah, I totally hear you. And on that baby Chark note, we can definitely get out of here. Josh, you've been given some really great advice. And if our RSO GMs want to go get the best dynasty perspectives, where can they go hunt you down, man?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Josh Brickner, JOSHBRICKNER. Pretty simple. Come to DLF. We have, in my opinion, the best dynasty advice out there. There is no off season. Also, if you want to hear me talk some Browns, sometimes I get a little negative about the Browns, but I've been positive this year. I'm hanging on, even though after Sunday we're still doing good. I always tweet it out when it's Cleveland Sports Pod, our Cleveland Sports Collective. We have a group of us fans, just podcasting for fans by fans. So, you know, we talk some Browns. When the Cavs season starts, we'll talk some Cleveland Cavaliers, even though we're not very interesting without LeBron. But yeah, come over and give us
Tribe also.
I don't talk Tribe. Other guys do. I'm a Tribe fan. Yeah, but guys, Chuck, he does a show about the Tribe. He's a fan of the Dolan's ownership. I'm not, so he hasn't invited me on, so I don't think he wants me to talk as bad about the Dolans. But anyways, thanks for having me on, guys. And yeah, if you have a spot in one of those leagues, I am in one of the RSO friends of the. I would love to come and play and deal some of those contracts. So.
Oh, absolutely. We will make that happen, man. They don't have to ask us twice. We've got a really great crew over here. They're doing some really good work this off season and this pandemic season. So Goody, appreciate you getting us together tonight, making do, coming to us live from the road. You've got all sorts of technical savvy going on right now. So where can our listeners go looking for you, man?
All right. You can find me on Twitter at MattGoody2.
All right, and this is Luke Patrick at Fantasy Doc Ock, hanging out with a couple of Ohio boys across the country. with another episode of All About Reality.